I'm Fathery.
This is Dave.
And this is Text Trek.
Engage.
Welcome back aboard the Starship Texas for the 269th installment of the Text Trek podcast, the home of Star Trek fandom from deep in the heart of Texas, where we take a deep look at Star Trek, old and new, and tonight we are talking about Star Trek in 2024, and what we expect from the franchise this year. This is our first show of 2024, day of recording January 5th, so we have the next 12 months kind of a blank slate. It's unwritten for the Star Trek fandom, for the franchise. But yeah, we're gonna have the final season of Discovery, the return of Prodigy on its new home, another round of Lower Decks, and the long overdue, finally, like, they're in production now, Star Trek Strange New World Season 3, and the Section 31 movie hasn't started shooting yet, but we're only weeks away from cameras rolling on Michelle Yeoh's Section 31 movie, so those were delayed for a long time with the strikes. But yeah, so we got a lot of stuff to talk about. Yeah. Even though this year is going to be like a lighter year in the amount of like content released, it's still going to be plenty for us to talk about. And in the weeks of no new Star Trek, like the probably the next couple of months at least, the jury is still out on when Prodigy is going to have season 2, but there's still going to be like, you know, things for us to talk about, and when there's not, we have old Star Trek to talk about, like, you know, we're about to get started on the next show that we're going to, the next legacy show that we're exploring, starting next week with Star Trek Enterprise. So if you're an Enterprise fan, or if you haven't watched Enterprise yet, that's still on your bucket list.
I think even non-fans should tune in, because I it'll be interesting to get my frank and newbie appraisal and maybe reconsider things, maybe see where someone lands in the year 2024 watching it. There's going to be all kinds of reasons to watch it.
Yeah, I think we're coming at it from, like, different perspectives, too, because, like, me, like, almost entirely the people I've talked about Enterprise with in, like, the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, it's just been, like, overwhelmingly, like, I don't know, people, like, really like that show. It's just been, like, very, like, positive.
Yeah. The wheel has turned.
Yeah, whereas, like, when that show was on the air, that was certainly, like, that was not the case at all. So that'll be fun. But yeah, we'll get into that starting next week. But before we go into today's topic, though, just a bit of housekeeping. I do need to say thank you to the wonderful Text Trek patrons out there. And I just want to give all of y'all a quick shout out now. Thank you, Starfleet Sohel, Cake is Eternal, Crazy Dutchie, Joanne Robertson, John Daw, Geek Filter, Earl Grey Trekkie, Quarkspar, Vinginium, Stephanie Durantes, Matthew Averett, Braxton, Chuck A, and our anonymous supporters. We really appreciate your continued support. We got Dave a new microphone if he sounds we haven't like tweaked with any of the settings yet. So if there's anything y'all want us to change, like, let us know.
I'm already very into it. It's so sexy looking. It's gonna make it hot.
Yeah, that'll be the hot sexiness for 2024 that we promised in
We weren't messing around. It wasn't just banter. It's the real deal. But yes, thank you to our patrons for helping fund our technological improvements.
Yeah, it would look real sketch if we asked y'all to help us out and give us money, and then y'all did, and then, like, things never got better. so hopefully people see and hear the improvements as we're able to roll them out. But please thank a patron. Or blame them if you don't like our stuff.
Or become one.
Yeah, you become one, and then you can gain the
influence. We'll only make it cooler.
You can also gain access to our monthly Patreon watch parties. We have one coming up on, it's actually going to be January 20th. I might have announced January 12th. Previously to some of, I hadn't done it on anything official, but I might have mentioned that to some people individually. But I am asking that, like, we actually have that on January 20th because January, 12th or 13th. Yeah. 13th. That's the Saturday. That's going to be the day of John Billingsley's annual, Trek Talks, where the Trek Geeks, they do that. Our friends over there, Aaron Harvey and Drawn to Trek as part of their network. There's actually going to be a day-long, they call it a streaming telethon. It's kind of like that Jerry Lewis style thing for like Jerry's Kids back in the day. But this is for the Hollywood Food Coalition. They're going to have like panels. It's a virtual convention, basically. And hopefully people tune in and watch that. You can call in and donate money. And they, like, some of the panels they're going to have, there's a Tuvix panel, which I think is like really exciting. They're going to have like the writer of that episode and the actor who played Tuvix and Tim Russ are all going to be there.
That is jumping into some hot water there, but I'm sure they're going to handle it well. But I think that's actually really cool.
Yeah. So it starts, I think, like noon on the East Coast. There, I think everyone on there is probably in like the LA area. So it's like 10 in the morning for them. But it runs for like 8 or 9 hours. So basically, like all day Saturday, January 13th. So folks, check that out. And then if you are able to help us out in the Patreon, you can come in as little as $2 a month. That'll get you into the watch party we're doing on January 20th. That's one of our patrons, Robbie. It's his birthday month this month. And if you come in at a certain tier, you can pick what we watch on your birthday. And he's not being very selective. He's not, I think he's not sure if he's going to be able to make it to the watch party with work. We might try to like see what time we might do it like a little later than normal. Cause I'd like Robbie to be there if he'd like to be, but yeah, we're going to do a DS9 episode and a Strange New Worlds episode. So I don't know which one. I think we might just pick things at random. It's like, hey, those are two good shows. Let's just roll the dice.
That sounds exciting to me. Those shows have good track records.
But yeah, he said, oh, I don't care, Fathery, whatever people want to watch. Let's do a Strange New Worlds or a DS9. And I'm just like, hey, I'm just going to just randomly pick both. But we got like a little bit of news with like some merch stuff going on since last we talked. I think this is important to point out the 4K disc physical media, because we just don't get much of that with, you know, a lot of shows don't do 4K disc releases. So we're very lucky that they do that for Strange New Worlds. It's the only Star Trek TV show that's gotten like episodes released on a 4K disc. Season 2 came out in December, so, and I haven't picked it up yet. I was, I guess, too busy working on the Christmas special. It kind of slipped under my radar till this week, but I don't even know where to, like, you can't buy Blu-rays at Best Buy anymore, so I don't know, I guess Target. It's like, it's harder to, like, buy stuff. I kind of like brick-and-mortar stores, but that's, I guess they're starting to become relics of the past. But that's just reminding people that's out there, so if you like having physical media Star Trek, I encourage people, you know, pick these things up. The reason why Star Trek does get physical media releases is, like, our fans actually buy those products. So, as long as we keep doing it, they'll keep putting it out.
Yeah, the disappearance of Prodigy Scare should remind us all of the merits of physical media.
Oh, and here's, like, another perfect example of that, Dave. You know, the Playmates brought back the action figures that you probably have, like, a lot of memories of, just given in that heyday in the 90s.
The 90s ones, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, they brought that line, well, not, like, that exact line, but they brought a very similar line back, kind of like a throwback to that era back. And they announced a few weeks ago they're discontinuing that because not many people bought the action figures, so... I bought two. I bought like two of the Prodigy ones to help Prodigy trend. But I think they're still doing like they're still going to do like some of the props, like some of like the phasers and communicators and some like toy ships. But they're discontinuing the action figures. So that
that's too bad.
Yeah, that Joel's got all of the Prodigy ones, as he's reminding us in the live audience. I know like they unlock things for the video game. So,
oh, that's cool. And, you know, those characters had such a good character design. I imagine they all look great together.
And, you know, they're taking the toys away, but the plus side of that is like, okay, we're losing the action figures, but we're getting the model ships back after the Eagle Moss collapse. They found a new company called Fanhome that's in Italy that will take over, I guess, production of new model ships. So they're saying like these will be like new ships. I think these are going to be like ships that like Eagle Moss never got around to. So like so, like the newer stuff from like Picard season 3 and and you know, it's like stuff like that. Just I guess like anything from like the last like 2 years of the TV shows, which is like a lot of ships. You know, like Picard season 3 had like all those like Doug Drexler design. You had like the, what like the Duderstadt class, and there's a bunch of Starfleet ships in there, like the Shrike, stuff like that. Discovery had like I guess like anything in their season 4 would be like.
Do they get around to lower deck stuff, or is that too
a little bit
off the beaten path?
They were just starting to roll out more, you know, lower deck. They had done like the Cerritos and like the shuttles and the Vancouver, and you know, I'm sure they would have continued. But yeah, so lost the action figures, but model ships are back. So yay, take that. That's that kind of like sums it up. You know, you can't take like the wins and the losses of life. Mm. But the big win, I think, is just having like the shows like back in production. We don't have to worry about the strikes or any of that stuff. The last like news topic that will kind of like transition us into our just talking about like the current state of the franchise for 2024. But I'm sure everyone heard about there's been a lot of talks recently of Paramount Global as a company, and I guess like just like their corporate structure in general as the parent company of Paramount Plus and of Paramount and the Star Trek franchise itself. But it was kind of like the long, I've talked about this a lot, but it was kind of like the long, like lifelong goal of Sherry Redstone, who has the, she owns, or her company or whatever owns the controlling ownership of Paramount Global, where, you know, she's the kind of the decision maker. And it's important to her to have, you know, CBS, Viacom, everything, Paramount all back together in like one massive company, too big to get swallowed up by Disney, but like this big giant thing that she could then sell to, you know, one of the, like, someone like Amazon or Netflix or Apple. And apparently, like, there are reports now that she was shopping Paramount Global around to all of them. And I think she did too good of a job, and she made it, like, too big and too expensive. And none of them want to buy, like, the entire thing, it sounds like. So I don't know what's going to happen now if Paramount will be, like, I guess, like, there's two possibilities. Like, one, like, she'll either try, or I guess three possibilities. She'll either try to, like, just sell her ownership. There is talk of, like, controlling ownership gets sold off. Or the other thing that might happen is just Paramount Global just gets broken up. And it might, you know, the risk of that is like, what if someone owns the TV stuff and someone owns the movie stuff? And, you know, would be scary if that got split up.
Yeah, I don't like this.
And then like the other possibility, I guess, would just be like if Paramount Global merged with a big company. But which is like the thing that they're talking about now with the recent, I guess, headline of David Zaslav of Discovery Warner, who's not particularly well liked lately, especially in lieu of the strikes. But he also like started the trend of like deleting content for tax breaks.
Yeah, not exactly endearing himself to the fan base.
Yeah, but I mean, like he did that with he basically like deleted the Batgirl movie from existence. And as a result, you know, we lost Prodigy when he showed, like, oh, you can actually, like, become profitable deleting art from existence.
Yeah, that sounds like the ultimate extension of capitalism.
I think people would, I mean, rightfully so, be concerned if Paramount Global got merged into Discovery Warner. Yeah, it would not be, like, a great scenario, but it's pretty far from happening. It's just, like, all they said was, like, oh, there's, like, they might be talking about doing that, but it would be like a big like legal fiasco. It would be like, oh, would they be a monopoly? Like you would have a lot of like Washington involvement. And I don't like both these companies have a lot of debt. It might not actually like increase stock value. So they might be like, oh, actually, like we don't want to do this. Zaslav might actually like pump the brakes and back off. But yeah, I don't know. It's likely that something crazy will happen within the next year or two, though. And something will, something will change with the structure of Paramount Global, so just something to be aware of.
So we should brace for possibilities.
Yeah, I mean, it's I feel like that's true for not just like our entertainment, but a lot of the world seems like really like uncertain in 2024.
A little unstable. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess just get used to just being in that state of existence. But the peace of mind, like, we have, like, a decent idea of how things are going to play out, you know, like, this year. Like, it's not going to impact, like, you know, like, Discovery Season 5 or Lower Decks Season 5. Are they both having a Season 5 this year? That's crazy, but I guess they are. I didn't think of that until now.
Oh. Wait, Lower Decks is on Season 5?
Yeah, it's never missed a year.
How did they didn't start the same year as Disco.
No, but they've never missed a they've every 12 months have released a new season.
Okay. Where did Disco have a skip?
Just
pandemic, okay. Like 2020, 2021?
Okay, so Dave's like, shit, I shouldn't have asked this now. Discovery yep. Season 1 premiered, it premiered in September of 2017, and then they split that. And then half of it came out in 2017, half of it they held until early 2018. And then Season 2 of Disco was early 2019. And then Season 3 of Disco was late 2020, the same year that Lower Decks premiered. So that year we got like Season 1 of Lower Decks and Season 3 of Discovery. And then the year after that was 2021, and we had Season 2 of Lower Decks and then Season 4 of Discovery came out. It was split. We got like half of it that year, and then the other half we got in 2022, which is when we got Lower Decks Season 3. And then last year in 2023, we had no Discovery, but we had Lower Decks Season 4. And so then this year we'll get both Season 5 of Discovery and Season 5 of Lower Decks.
It's like a convergence of the stars. it must mean something.
Well,
I don't know what
it means. One show gets a season out every 12 months and the other one's not quite as fast, so the faster one caught up eventually. But there might actually be a delay in Season 5 of Lower Decks, because they're still like they were late, like recording the actor dialogue, like they weren't doing like the voice actor recording until the actors came off of, even though like the animation wasn't struck work. I think it was like more of like a solidarity thing. A lot of actors were just trying to avoid work for struck companies, and I think we'll still get Lower Decks Season 5 this year, but we'll talk more about that when we get to Lower Decks. I think it just might be a little later than usual. It is possible that like Paramount Plus might go away in the next couple of years, and Star Trek might have all of it might have a new streaming home somewhere, or you know, Paramount Plus might be merged with Max or something in a couple of years, or who knows, or it could be with Peacock. But you know, like how could see, that's like another thing, is like Comcast wouldn't be able to merge with Paramount Global, because you can't own NBC and CBS both. That would be like that would be like super illegal. The what do you call it? The FEC wouldn't allow that. The FCC, one of those government agencies.
FCC, but yeah.
Yeah.
So, Father, like Discovery, we could end up 1,000 years in the future. We're not quite sure what the next season of Star Trek will bring.
Well, I mean, like, we're pretty good for, like, I'm just saying, like,
in future years,
yeah. Like,
right. We'll have some stability for now.
Yeah, whatever, like the corporate realignment or whatever that happens within, I don't know, like the next 18 months or whatever, like something will happen. And then like another 2 or 3 years from now, we'll have like the fallout of it. And I see P.E. in the live comments is asking about the Section 31 movie. He's asking if that'll be released this year. And I think that's also a possibility. I'll talk about like 31 in just a second. Before that, Dave, let's go through like the five, I guess, franchise items we're going to talk about tonight.
Yeah, the big guns.
So we got Strange New Worlds, Section 31 movie, Prodigy, Discovery, and that new Academy show. So let's start off with Strange New Worlds. We're both fans of this one.
Yeah, for me, it's the best.
So as people probably recall, there was it was supposed to go into production back in the spring of last year. It did not. Strikes happened. It was delayed, and then after Thanksgiving, they actually got cameras rolling for a little bit before Christmas. They did like a couple weeks of shooting in December, and then they shut down for Christmas break. And then I just saw on social media today they said they're going to resume production on Monday. So that's good. They're cooking up a season up in Toronto where, you know, it's terrible winter weather, so I don't think they're going to be on any locations. I think that AR wall is going to be heavily used in season 3, but that's okay. They've had plenty of time to write these episodes and animate some cool graphics in the AR wall, so I'm sure it'll look cool.
Anson Mount got a babysitter so he can indulge a little bit more on the show.
I was starting to get tired of people talking about like Anson Mount's baby, just like, good God, this is not the first time someone with a job had a kid. It's like, okay, they took a little time off and then went back to work. Like, it happens like all the time, y'all. Like, chill out.
Easy, fathery. Easy. I'm not that guy.
I know. Just don't like panic. There were people like the knee-jerk reactions, like, oh my God, they're gonna cancel the show and put Paul Wesley as captain of the Enterprise because Anson's gonna quit to go hang out with his baby. And it's just like,
is that what they sounded like?
That's exactly what they sounded like, but it didn't happen. So people can calm down. We got the Section 31 movie also shooting. Well, not yet. It's gonna start in the 29th. So what is that? 3 weeks. But Section 31, I think it will come out this year. They're gonna be done shooting it in March. I think they're looking at like 7 weeks of production, and then yeah, you'll have like a it's only gonna be like a 2-hour movie, right? So even if like they're okay, it's like a movie, they're gonna put like a little bit like extra effort and stuff. I think like okay, give them like 3-4 months of post. That's all you need. So yeah, I think we could get the Section 31 movie by the end of the year. I think it could be like a fall or winter release.
It seems like it'd make a certain amount, like Michelle Yeoh's going to be riding high on her Oscar win for a while, but it seems like the quicker you can strike while the iron's hot, the better. So it seems like it would be smart for them to get it out this year if they could.
Yeah. And I'm sure she's going to be in a bunch of stuff this year. I see like Netflix heavily promoting something they're doing with her, but she's kind of in the, she has the privilege of kind of being able to, like, she's doing whatever she wants to do right now. And I guess if, you know, if you wanted the Section 31 movie, then you're in luck that, yeah, she wanted to do more Star Trek. So that's what she's coming back for. Jill is asking in the live audience, is it a TV movie or theaters? And it's going to be like a made-for-streaming movie. Although they could do like a Fathom release thing or something. They've done that with some of their episodes before. Like they did that with some Picard episodes, even like some Lower Decks stuff. So the PE is saying the Section 31 movie will technically be the first new Star Trek movie since Star Trek Beyond. Kind of wild to think about it. And yeah, we're currently living in the largest gap between Star Trek movies since they made the first Star Trek movie in 1979. Star Trek Beyond came out, what, 8 years ago now?
Oh, that's wild.
Yeah. So we've never had an 8-year gap. Before that, the biggest gap was what, like 4 years? Or no, I guess like between Nemesis and 09. And that was, it was 7 years. So yeah, right? Because that was 02 to 09.
Sounds right. Yeah.
So we're in a bigger gap now between movies.
But it's not like we feel like we're lacking for Trek content.
No, not at all. And I'm fine with, hell, like, yeah, put it on streaming. Like, if it's like a movie that, like, needs to be in the theater, if it, like benefits from that, like, you know, big screen and some, if it's like a, if you have, like, actors or, like, visual effects that you wouldn't be able to do unless you have, like, the big, like, you know, like, that massive budget, which I think Star Trek rarely needs any massive budget. So, I think, yeah, just put it on streaming. Let me, like, save me a trip from to the theater. Let me just, like, watch it at home.
I'd love to see it in the theater, honestly, but I have a feeling Trek broadly for me is better on TV. It's that's what it's made for. Even when they release a movie, I think it's suitable to, maybe better suited for TV. And then they, you know, if it's not a theatrical production, they don't have to think about it in that sort of way. They don't, hopefully the writing takes front seat and effects and spectacle take a little bit of a back seat. Although, you know, I know there's going to be badass action in it and stuff like that too.
Yeah, Michelle Yeoh has described it as Guardians of the Galaxy meets Mission Impossible, which I don't really want that for a Section 31 story. Like, I want Section 31 to be the bad guys. I don't want them to be like fun Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Impossible stuff. But
I mean, to be honest, and it would, I think it'd be, if it's not that, I think it's smart for her not to reveal that. Because, I think you want some surprises, and that would be a really cool thing to be like, oh shit, they are revealing that these are really, they're doing some shady shit. And I think that would really make it stand out. Like, you know, we've seen stuff that's like Guardians. There's the Dungeons and Dragons movie that came out last year or in the last year, was really very good and clearly took a lot from Guardians. Like, it's structured exactly like that ragtag group of misfits.
Yeah, get streaming done. Streaming now on Paramount Plus with Showtime, or it was.
There you go. But right. But
most
know,
of what I know about Dungeons and Dragons, I learned from that movie.
But I would like, I don't want the exact formula. I like Guardians like anybody else, but I would like this to have some teeth to it. I hope you're right, Fathery, that they do not present Section 31 as some sort of necessary thing that's just how the world we live in or whatever, the galaxy we live in. So, yeah, that'd be great. That'd be if they went that route.
Dave, you mentioned something interesting, though. You were talking about, keeping a lid on things, or like there might be like surprises or something. And, that this is interesting to me. This movie starts shooting in 3 weeks. Who else is cast in this besides Michelle Yeoh?
This is an actual, like, I don't know how rhetorical you're being, but like, we don't really know, right?
No, we don't know. Like, Shahzad Latif had talked about some stuff like years ago, like, oh yeah, they're going to use me in Section 31. And then, he's on like some other show now. Like, I don't know. Like, he hasn't talked about Star Trek in a long time. I don't think he's anywhere to be seen in this. Maybe he might pop up in it, but I am wondering, is there like a big surprise in the casting, either like another big actor who like really wanted to work with Michelle Yeoh, which is very possible. And, Paramount Plus, they're putting, like, Harrison Ford and Sylvester Stallone and, a bunch of big names on their streaming service. So we know, like, they will find the cash for big names. That's clearly important to them. Paramount Plus will do that. But they're either doing that or I think they're bringing back a legacy character. Maybe someone with ties to Section 31. Mm. Like, I don't know, Malcolm Reed, Bashir, Garrick, who the hell knows? It could be anybody. I'm just talking out my ass. I don't have anything to like base that on, but it's like it's just odd to me that they haven't said anything about the casting.
It's some bold speculation, Fathery. I like it. I like the ideas,
but I don't. Maybe it's just like, oh, we don't know how we're going to promote this because there's a strike and blah 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 blah, and we're just not going to say anything for now. So that could also be going on. Who knows?
Right. Could just be purely pragmatic reasons, but honestly, I think it'd be a legacy character like Malcolm Reed would be a good fit for it. It would be a chance to kind of elevate him a little bit, and remind people of the connective tissue of Star Trek. Bashir would be great. I'd honestly be more scared of him because I think they did great work with him, where I think Reed didn't have the best of work from what I've seen. and so I'm like almost nervous. I'm like, don't fuck up Bashir, man. Don't screw up what DS9, all their work. So that would be my concern. Whereas I think with they did Malcolm, it could kind of like only go up, only be better.
So in our live audience, Rachel is saying, God, if Bashir comes back, I will cry. And for people who don't know, I believe I'm correct in saying that is her favorite character.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Benjenium mentioning that Siddig is a pretty hot property. They should include him. I actually don't know what he's done other than like Game of Thrones.
And he
was in the last many was years.
Ra's al Ghul in Gotham, but I never watched any of that. But I always thought that was awesome casting. I was like, oh yeah, put Siddig in as Ra's al Ghul.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Give him a chance to do a little villainous turn.
Like if you're born Malcolm McDowell's racially ambiguous nephew, And you happen to like follow his footsteps and go into acting, I feel like you're built for Ra's al Ghul. I feel like
for sure.
I feel like he was born for that role.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because he was basically like Ra's al Ghul. He should be like he should have like that Malcolm McDowell gravitas, but without the whiteness. I would be. I guess open to them doing. I don't feel as, I guess, protective of that type of stuff because I don't think it would. I can't really imagine like something they would do that would like fuck it up or that would like mess up that stuff for me.
What if, Father, they portrayed him as just living that spy life that he dreamed of, but there was no moral ambiguity and he's just like having a Mission Impossible romp with these guys and just loving every minute of it? That sounds terrible.
I mean, I don't know. I have a hard time kind of picturing that. I guess I'd have to see it.
And honestly, I don't think that they would do that,
I could see him if he's like, if he's like, he kind of throws himself into like, instead of, he's like become like a soldier instead of a doctor, but he's like, he's kind of accepted it.
You know, I was already annoyed enough that Seven of Nine became this, ranger type person. I didn't really like that.
Oh, and I liked that too. I liked the Finn. I'm kind of sad we didn't see more Finnris Ranger 7.
I want people to escape violence. In Star Trek.
Well, she ended up captain of the Enterprise. So it worked out.
That's a place that I like her better. I'll say that. I'd be down with that. Anything else on Section 31?
No, but the interesting thing, we're talking a second ago about, like, Discovery, how when they did, like, split seasons before, that's something they might do with Strange New Worlds, just to get something else out sooner. Mm-hmm. So they're going to be shooting until May, like, the earliest possible. You got to figure, like, they'll need, like, at least, like, 6 months of post-production. So the earliest we would see anything would be, like, very, very late in the year, like, November, December. However, they might split the season and, you know, give us like 5 episodes at the end of the year, and then, you know, have a Christmas, take it off, have, you know, Christmas break from Star Trek, come back in the early in the year, do like another 5 episodes of Strange New Worlds. I think something like that might happen. Maybe they'll split it around the Section 31 movie. Maybe we'll get 5 Strange New Worlds episodes, take a break, Section 31 Christmas. It'll be a fun time. Guardians of the Galaxy meets Mission Impossible, baby. then, you know, Happy New Year, we come back and get 5 episodes of Strange New Worlds. Something like that might happen.
Sure.
But, yeah, it's basically like they're shooting all this stuff now, and we'll see it in about a year.
Yeah. I wonder, you know, when we'll start getting, like, trailers and things for that, you know, or if they'll be kind of tight-lipped about it.
Yeah. San Diego Comic-Con, for sure, we'll probably have trailers for Section 31 and Strange New World, so at least like in 6 months, but probably like much sooner than that. I think they'll probably show us something. Maybe they haven't really done much for First Contact Day last couple of years, but maybe they'll do something for First Contact Day in April, or maybe, like, a lot of times they just like release trailers like by themselves, like, hey, here's a trailer, here's a little press release for all the press sites to copy paste, enjoy. Them, if you know, and whenever they do that, of course, if you listen to the podcast, I recommend that you subscribe to the YouTube channel as well, because when there's breaking news and stuff like that, a lot of times we'll just do like streams breaking down that news, you know, reacting mm-hmm. to trailers and stuff like that, so people can get our hot takes on that stuff as soon as it drops.
I feel like the hot take on Section 31 is going to be an interesting one. Whatever they choose to show us is going to be like the first real inkling we have of what this will be. That's going to be an exciting thing to talk about.
This is kind of like the most divisive thing they've done in like the modern era of Trek, I guess.
Divisive to anybody but us?
Within the fandom. Yeah. Okay. Like, to like the general audience, it probably won't really matter. But yeah, for like because a lot of fans are like concerned with, you know, have a lot of concerns with Section 31. And I think Section 31 one's a great thing to have. It's just like a story generating thing in the Star Trek universe. I think it's a great way to explore some of like the Roddenberry values and stuff. It's like, oh yeah, what if there's like this bad guy, but he's like on your side, and he wants to accomplish the same objectives you do, but he's gonna do it in very questionable ways. I think, yeah, like that's a perfect thing to have in Star Trek.
Yeah, there are great opportunities. And yet there is the risk that they could go towards more something that's just what's even the word I'm looking for? Just entertainment, just kind of escapist, I guess.
My least favorite thing in all of Star Trek of 2023 was in Star Trek Picard, when Worf says Section 31 is a critical division of Starfleet. Like, I hate that. Like, I don't want Section 31 to be like a cool thing that's like on the side of the good guys. I want it to be like, as I described a second ago, as this antagonistic force. Or is it antagonistic? It's aligned with your goals. So it's technically like, you know, from a very literal sense, it's in alignment with the protagonist. So therefore it can't be an antagonist, but it's also, it was like doing like this evil stuff that like you don't like. That's a perfect moral quandary for Star Trek to play around with.
I see Brian Dewart in the comments was surprised that there were people against the Section 31 movie, and we've talked about this in past episodes, but broadly, Fathery, when they were first brought in Deep Space Nine, they were quite sinister and presented as such, even though, you know, Bashir had a little bit of like he wanted to go and do his spy fantasy, but then he kind of found out, oh, this is not, you know, this is not the fun James Bond life that I dreamed of. But then they did, of course, they're, you know, they play a vital role and a morally questionable role, but an interesting one in the Dominion War in bringing that to a close. So, you know, they have presented them as, you know, as a possible, I don't know if I'm going to even say necessity, but something that did play a decisive role in the defeat of the bad guys. So that all that moral ambiguity is there. But yeah, I don't think neither Father or I just want them to be fun loving black ops guys.
Yeah, I don't there to be like a defense of like, okay, well, sometimes you need the CIA to go like rig this election and assassinate these people in this other country just so you can have like your good happy society over here. I don't really like that as like a message, especially for Star Trek. Moving on, Star Trek Prodigy, some very very good news, getting that show a new home on Netflix. You know, wasn't too worried. It's the people working on it were like pretty confident it was gonna find a home somewhere, so I guess it's just like a matter of where and when. So very relieved to have those questions answered. The the where is Netflix, the when was a Christmas Day season one released on Netflix. Season two we still don't know, and we don't know how it's going to be released. I keep talking about how like it's probably going to come in like groups of episodes, because that's how Netflix does domestic shows to American audiences. It always does those exclusives in like batches. It doesn't do like week by week, which annoys me because I prefer covering things week by week. I prefer watching things week by week most of the time.
Yeah,
but we'll talk about it however, whenever. Might be before April. We might do Prodigy before Discovery. We don't know yet.
Are the kids, are they warrant officers? Is that right?
Yeah, that was in the clip that we saw back in August. No. It was actually in the season one finale a year ago in December of 2022. I guess it was there that Janeway said that they would be like enlisted as acting warrant officers. But we know that they're going to be on the Voyager A, and Robert Picardo is going to be. I think Robert Picardo is going to have like the amount of screen time I think that Kate Mulgrew probably had in season one. I think he's going to be more. He's going to have the role of Hologram Janeway now that Hologram Janeway is blown up, and then Kate Mulgrew will just be Admiral Janeway doing the Admiral Janeway stuff.
That sounds great to me. I like all that. I don't want Janeway to go away, but I'd love to see the Doctor. So
having your cake fantastic. And eating it too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it's a good thing to like shake things up, you know, like that's something like if you watch like Buffy, that was like they did like a bunch of seasons in the high school, and then like they blew up their high school, and then they had like they're in like the magic shop for a little bit, and then like they blew that up, and it's like, you know, like the show would like change its like status quo. And I feel like Prodigy has, like, in 20 episodes, we took them from, like, oh, they're, like, in Tars Lamora. Oh, they got their ship. They're on the Protostar. And then, like, they blew up the Protostar. And, like, they're at the Academy. And, oh, now they're going to the Voyager. It's, like, I love that. I love the, like, the show is willing to, like, change. So, you know, we talk about, like, Discovery going from the 23rd to 32nd century was, like, pretty game-changing. But it's starting to occur to me that, you know, Prodigy actually is, I mean, like, they don't have, like, a reset button. You know, it's, like, they just have a go-forward button. I like that.
Yeah. And I would say, just for me personally, it feels a little bit more organic in Prodigy, you know, whereas it felt a little bit in Disco like they were kind of like, what thing can we do to kind of goose the energy of this season, not sort of what's the logical progression for these characters.
Totally.
Even though I do like the far-flung future launch thing, but we can talk about that a bit more in a second when we get to it.
Yeah, I feel like Discovery kind of like found its home in there. I don't know. Like, what else do you have on Prodigy before we get into Discovery?
Only pure enthusiasm.
It cracked the kids' top 10 in just like a matter of days of being on Netflix. So it was number. Guess what country it was the number one kids show streamed?
Spain.
Germany.
Okay.
But like Star Trek is huge in Germany. So
yeah, that's awesome.
It's huge only in countries that, like, it's funny because like I look at like who is listening or watching our content and what countries they're in, and it's like, oh yeah, the countries where English or German are like the dominant languages.
Yeah, right on.
It's like it didn't translate well into any other language apparently.
Trek fandom welcomes all, so that's great.
Let's talk about Discovery. You know, we're getting 10 episodes in April. It will be like a 10-episode run, no breaks. We don't know, like, what date in April, which is annoying. I guess there's, I don't know, how many Thursdays are in April? I guess it'll either be the, looks like the 4th, 11th, 18th, or 25th. So I wish they would just say, like, what day. Maybe they're keeping their options open. Maybe they don't know. Maybe Paramount Plus is waiting to see what Netflix does with Prodigy season two. Maybe that's the issue here. But yeah, so 10 episodes. It's been a while with Discovery. We haven't watched that show in a hot minute because they didn't release anything last year.
Yeah, it feels weird. It feels weird. Like it's been a weirdly long amount of time since I've seen those characters. And I do want to revisit them. Who's, by the way, we've got an image up showing, it's like a promotional still. The dude on the far right, that's the guy who's been glimpsed in the trailers, right?
Captain Rayner.
Who seems a bit at odds with Michael.
Yeah, so, and he's played by a franchise familiar face, Callum Keith Rennie, who I know from his work on Battlestar Galactica as Laoban. What's the rule with like spoilers on Galactica? Like I don't know.
I think you're okay. I think you're okay.
Well, I didn't say anything else about Laoban, but I just said that this is the guy who plays him.
Let's see. I see Rachel in the audience talking about the bittersweet ending of Discovery. You know, it's interesting because you know we've talked about this often, Fathery. This was the show upon which our podcast originally was founded. Essentially, not that we didn't do anything before it. We had some lead up stuff to it, but we began Text Trek in anticipation of Star Trek Discovery. So it's kind of always been our show. And yet, paradoxically, it is the show that has been ups and downs for me. As many things as I can find that I like about it, I've often found things that frustrate me.
Is it a bipolar experience? I've described it that way at times.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know if that might be kind of ableist to use that term.
Probably.
But
I learned
it from you.
I learned that. You wrote it in a Facebook post 10 years ago, and that's right. Where I remembered it from.
That was 10 years ago.
You're talking about talking about Michael Bendis's comic book writing.
Yeah, I'll stand by the assessment though. But yes, broadly speaking, it is a roller coaster ride. But whenever I see stills like this, I'm like, oh, you know, I want to see the thing that in the trailers and the teasers that I'm most interested in is honestly, it's not like the main plot, although the kind of the thiefy types that are going to be the antagonists or anti-heroes or whatever of it does kind of interest me. But the thing that mainly interests me is the brother-sister relationship between Burnham and Saru. I know that they can't have, I don't think they really knew it was going to be their final season when they were filming it, but I hope that that has some sense of resolution and that they maybe they lean into it in some way, because I think that's sort of the beating heart of the show.
Yeah, I'm sure when they did like their last episode reshoots, they probably were like, okay, we need something for like the final moment of like Saru and Michael together.
Okay, and yeah, so you've got a still up now of the those characters, just really briefly glimpsed in a trailer that's more of a teaser, right? I mean, they barely said anything. Most of what we know about it is from like reading some synopsis or another, right?
You're talking about Maul and L'Ock. Who,
yes.
They've been described as like the Bonnie and Clyde duo. They are former couriers, or like Michael was too for that year when she was doing her own thing with Book. But we don't know too much else about them. They're in the trailer, and then they're in one of the clips. There were two clips that were released. I guess we should talk about like that. They also put out a new clip in December in Brazil at the CCXP, which is a convention I've never heard of before, but I guess that's a big thing in Sao Paulo. But they were using that as an opportunity to promote Discovery, and that's when they actually announced the April premiere date or premiere window. It's not even a date, the window. But and they showed like a new clip that had I don't know, like cloaking aliens that Book is like mentally grappling with, and there's that clip, and then like the other clip, Dave. I don't think you were around when we talked about it, but you mentioned it like at another show. Like you don't like the one where Michael's like on top of their ship
during a warp speed chase kind of thing. Yes. Yes, it would be an understatement to say I dislike that clip.
I really like that clip because I loved how much like 32nd century like technology they packed into it from like the I don't know, like the black hole bomb or whatever that L'Ock and Maul use on Michael.
The first
and
part of it with them I thought was cool. It's when Michael is just kind of seems to be like quipping her way through this insane, utterly insane experience of being on the hull of a ship at warp, shooting into it, flying off of it, all that stuff, felt like even weirder than Star Wars stuff, honestly. It's like it felt like Guardians of the Galaxy.
But I want like the 32nd century of Discovery. I want it to have like technology that makes like Guardians of the Galaxy stuff look like cavemen. Like this era of Star Trek is like twice as far into the future as like from Picard as Picard is from us. So it's
right, but we talked about how they had to like they have to ground it somewhat in things we know. Like, you know, they still have phasers, they still, you know, have shields.
I get mad when I watch like Discovery and like Tilly has a phaser and it can't just like blow up like half a planet when she's like trying to like use it against like why is she having to like shoot this alien so much when in the original series they made a big deal about like how powerful phasers were, which I get like for TV it's like harder, like if you have like your technology can solve any problem that easy, it's hard to write good stories. So that's right. I think it's cool when like they find ways where they can actually play with. And I think for the most part, Discovery does a pretty good job of making it feel that far into the future. I was very concerned of them going to the 32nd century because I thought it was going to be too hard to convey that constantly. Like, but just things like the chairs that float there, they don't have any legs. That's like a pain in the ass visual effect. But I love that so much. I love like that effort. Or like the programmable matter or the TRICOM badges and like
all stuff I'm down with. I feel like somehow roping like you're like riding a bull at a rodeo, a ship at warp is just a bridge too far. I need Burnham to be like anxious and maybe even terrified during this. I know she's been in the 32nd century for what, couple years now?
3 years.
But it just seems like being on a ship at warp and being so casual about it, it removes my own sense of involvement in the scene. So casual. It reminded me of like when I was, when the Hobbit movie came out, you know, those kind of bloated Hobbit movies, the first one, and they're running around in the underground kingdom of the Goblin King, and the special effects guys just clearly went to town with like, oh, they're falling down this collapsing rock slide, oh, but now it looks like it's a ride and they're just having fun, and you know, they bounce and they land exactly on this rock structure.
Yeah, it was the escape from Rivendell in the second movie. We both hated that.
They kind of make it like a sort of funhouse thing where it's more just like a fun ride. And, yeah. And I need to have some suspense in there. But so that scene does make me nervous, but I like the opening bit with the couriers. That, and the little portable black hole thing, that was dope.
And I think maybe we get a look at like the big MacGuffin of the season, but basically the idea for people who don't recall, I feel like we've been talking about this stuff for almost 2 years at this point. But they're doing like an Indiana Jones type story where Michael and the Discovery are trying to find some MacGuffin. They're trying to find some ancient relic, and they got to beat Maul and La'ok from finding it first for whatever reason. We don't know what this thing. They said it's not going to be like a galaxy ending stakes. So whatever it is, I assume it doesn't like blow up the galaxy, which would have been my first guess if they hadn't said that. I don't know what they want it for.
If it was something that could cause some huge social upheaval or something like that, which honestly, I feel like the spore drive stuff could also be that, but
I think it might be propulsion technology. It might be something to like, whatever, like the last thing that they need to like fix the burn, like, oh, Discovery K, they brought like that 23rd century Starfleet spirit back into the future. And after 3 seasons of that, it was enough to, they found the secret ingredient to make everything utopian again.
I mean, I'll say this, Discovery has always been a kind of action-adventure-y show, like, more so in some case, I think, than some of the other Treks, and their presentation is a little bit more big-budget about it, and a, you know, an Indiana Jones-ish racing around the galaxy kind of thing, that's a fun plot structure.
Yeah, no, I like that. I think it's a good idea. It does sound like very Discovery. It's like, oh yeah, like Discovery has some strengths they can apply to that. I think that's a good idea. That's a good use of Discovery's time. Yeah, I think it'd be the Indiana Jones action adventure Trek. I do love that in this era of multiple Star Trek shows, I do love the variety. You know, like, I would be frustrated if the only Star Trek show we got was an animated comedy. But I love, like, having, like, Lower Decks when I can have it, like, in addition to Strange New Worlds and Picard and Prodigy. You know, it's like, I really like that variety. And so, yeah, I like Discovery doing the Discovery-ish stuff. Because, like, yeah, that's the show, that's the place for it, you know? There's a time and place.
Right, right. That MacGuffin, by the way, that they're carrying looks like Dungeons and Dragons dice. The size of a volleyball.
To me, like, when they show, if it even is the actual, like, hot item that they're tracking, but just the thing that we see them holding in some of the clips and trailers, to me, it kind of looks like the Hellraiser puzzle box. They has, like, moving parts that have, like, little, like, glyphs and symbols on them. So, Jill in our live audience is saying, I just want Calypso connections at this point. And I'm wondering if when they did, like, those reshoots, did they include anything to wrap up Calypso? So be like a fun poll to have. Like, I don't know. Maybe we should take bets. Like, will Discovery season 5? I don't know. Let me think about it. Where I land.
Was Calypso, was that the short trek?
Yeah, that was the short trek that introduced Zora in that whole thing with the Discovery computer.
Right, right.
I don't know. I wish they would just go ahead and, like, say, tell us when Prodigy is coming out and the exact day in April when Discovery is coming out, because if they just told us that, then I could be like, oh, here's everything that Text Trek is going to do between now and then, and I might be fun to do, like, some retrospective stuff with Discovery. I know we didn't really have much of a chance to do that with Picard, but, you know, Picard just had, like, 30 episodes. We have over twice that with Discovery. I think there's, I don't know, this is, like, kind of like a bigger part of our lives for a longer time, and I would like to do something too. If nothing else, I think we need to do a retrospective show on season 4 that we never did. So I think it might just be fun just to rediscuss season 4 before we go into season 5, and something to, you know, kind of discuss.
Yeah, honestly,
the
I could use something to jog my memory.
Yeah, you haven't seen it in 2 years, so. Yeah. But yeah, and season 4 was, like, my favorite season of Discovery. And it was the only one that had, like, an ending that ended with strong, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah, there were some cool big ideas going on in there, right? That was all at the Edge of the Galaxy stuff.
Yeah, with the 10C.
Yeah. Yep.
Then, like, Stacey Abrams shows up and awkwardly, like, acts like someone who's, like, not really a professional actor.
Yeah, there were little frustrating bits along the way, but also lots of bits I remember that were cool, especially the kind of big alien communication stuff that was going on. That was dope.
And to honestly, me, that makes me feel better about them doing. I'm sorry, Dave. Just real quick. That makes me feel better about them doing, like, this real, like, kind of silly. You know, this is kind of action adventure-y. This is more like a Fast and Furious type Star Trek. This is kind of Kelvin-y. This is kind of like popcorn Star Trek with, like, this Indiana Jones, you know, chase to find the ancient relic, whatever type thing that they're doing. But I think with, like, season 4 of Discovery, they did, like, hey, we can, like, slow down and do, like, let's just do, like, a storyline that's going to be, like, oh, a lot of people in rooms with very talky scenes dealing with a science fiction concept and moral dilemmas and real-life science, like, you know, like, linguistics and biology and all kind and physics. And they were trying to do, like, I don't know, they were trying to be, like, a little bit more mature and thoughtful and heady. They got, like, a little headier. We had, like, season 4 was, like, the heady season of this, where it felt, like, confident enough. It didn't have to depend on, like, oh, look, we're, like, getting shot at by butterfly people. Like, and I like that when they did that, like, in the first episode, but, like, it didn't like depend on that stuff. It was confident enough to be like, okay, but now we'll slow down. We're just going to talk and we're going to, like, just have a Federation Council meetings and stuff. And it kind of felt more like traditional Star Trek in some ways, I suppose, now that I'm, like, talking about some of the stuff out loud. But I think that was a kind of, like, a sign of confidence. And now that they've shown that, like, oh, yeah, we can play with that stuff when we want to. But we can still do, like, action adventure-y things, too. So I kind of like that. I feel like they're going into the season kind of, like, feels like they can cover all their bases.
Yeah, hopefully season 5 will also work with some version of that balance. You know, of action adventure, but grounded in some Trek moral dilemmas and, you know, sci-fi-ish problems.
Quantum in the live audience is saying, can't they go back in time for dilithium? And they can't do that in Discovery because, like, all the time travel is banned unless you know, like, Carl, the Guardian of Forever. But, you know, he seems to be kind of restrictive on what he allows time travel for. So that's a plot point they explained in season 3.
Also, it just as a general sort of broad moral rule in Trek, you're not supposed to go, like, willy-nilly go back and, you know, mess with the past, right?
Yeah.
I mean, even if there weren't people who were, you know, like time stream protector types, like it's risky business.
I see a Don Don Ranger Powers is saying, honestly, I won't expect Indiana Burnham to be the best or worst of Star Trek in 2024, in my honest opinion. And yeah, I think that I'm where you. I think there's probably going to be stuff that I like much more than Discovery Season 5. Or there's probably going to be stuff I like much less. I think like the idea of the storyline is like it's going to be somewhere in the middle. But I'm okay with that.
Yeah. You know, as always, the main thing that I think I'm most looking forward to is seeing the characters. I hope Tilly isn't too removed from the show.
Oh, she's billed as part of the regular cast. So I think we're going to have more Tilly in season 5 than we had in season 4.
Okay.
Is she going to be a regular on that Academy show? Like, we just in universe, like the character was spending time at the Academy is the reason why we're all thinking that.
Right, right. I still hope that happens. I want that to happen.
Yeah, I want
to. If it doesn't, it's not like the end of things, but it seems obvious. I think her character, she'd be a fun instructor and or advisor or whatever it is, whatever role she puts into it.
A lot of these people, like I would be happy for anyone to come back. If Wilson Cruz I think Doug Jones would be great. Like I think Professor Saru is like I want him to be like,
oh yeah,
he could be like, I could picture him as like headmaster of the Academy or like something like that, you know?
Yeah, and I feel like the show would be a great venue for them to have guest stars, because guest lecturers or like a, you know, training mission with, you know, such and such as an advisor, the old EMH or, you know, something like that could, anything. I feel like you could kind of with a little bit of work sneak in there.
Let's talk about the Academy show then. Yeah. I feel like we're transitioning to that. We don't know much of anything about the show. They really haven't like officially said that it's 32nd century, but we're all thinking that. They did say in like their official blurb, they're like, it'll be the first full class of the Academy in 100 years or, you know, something along those lines. So it's like, okay, this is like after the burn. Academy is like reopened. But we know like Tawny Newsome is going to be one of the I guess we like know the people working on the show, like people in the writer's room. So Tawny Newsome, first time a Star Trek show regular became staff writer. There's been actors who wrote before, but no one who was a staff writer.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that seems to bode well. Do we know anything else at this point? Or is it all pure speculation?
Yeah, I guess we just know that it'll be, I guess, kind of a focus towards like a younger audience, kind of. Like, they're going for like that Wednesday Addams crowd.
Yeah. Well, you know, the still that you've got up, which I assume has like a little, the side that has the promotional part says, admission is now open to Starfleet Academy. Explore the galaxy, captain your destiny. And I think one thing that would be cool for them to play up is that wish fulfillment vibe of like, you know, in some ways, Father, I know you were never a Harry Potter guy, but I think everybody when they who was a fan when they watched it, there was some element of, oh, wouldn't it be cool to have gone to this school? You know, it made school seem like this like really cool, fun, exciting thing.
Oh.
And I think that sort of wish fulfillment in a Starfleet setting could be really cool and exciting. And of course, they would also show, well, there's challenges. Oh, there's, you know, risks at times and stuff. And so I think all of that could be, I think all of that could be cool, but it should be cool to be at Starfleet Academy.
I think it was at San Diego Comic Con. I don't remember what year, but there was a deaf individual in attendance to a panel that Alex Kurtzman was on. And he asked, will we ever get like a deaf character in Star Trek? How kind of Geordi LaForge was a blind character. Could we have like the equivalent as like a deaf person? And Alex Kurtzman responded like, honestly, you just gave me that idea right now, and yes, it'll happen someday. I think there's going to be a deaf kid at the Academy, or maybe a deaf teacher, but a deaf character, I think, in the show. I don't know. Maybe we'll see if Alex Kurtzman kept his promise to that fan or not. We'll find out.
Oh, wow. Put the pressure on him, Fathery.
Well, we know that he listens to Text Trek. You know, he gets a lot of good ideas from us.
There's a meme I see float around, and forgive me if I butcher the language on this, but it shows people who have had various stripes of disabilities on Star Trek, whether it's the loss of their legs or Geordi's eyes or whatever. And it said, you know, it's probably pulling a quote from Roddenberry or one of the other producers. The idea being that, you know, in Trek's future, it's not that they've eliminated disabilities, it's that disabilities are accommodated without question or, you know, judgment. And I like, you know, of course that's a great Trekkie idea. So if they can pull that off, that'd be great.
Yeah, I just remembered that what's his name? The guy who does the Geek History Lessons podcast. I can't think of his name, but he's going to be one of the writers on the show too. So he's an old school Star Trek fan. He talks about Star Trek a lot in his content. He goes back to like a deep love of the franchise. So,
mm-hmm.
So yeah, they have some, but this will be kind of like the show that like Alex Kurtzman is the most involved, like the most like hands on. And I feel like he's a lot better at like hiring other writers than like writing himself. So, I guess that's kind of a little concerning to me, but I don't know. I mean, the people he puts in charge of, like, these other shows, I feel like they've all, like, done good stuff. So hopefully he's surrounded himself with, I think he is. I think the Academy show is going to be okay. It's just, I know for me, it's not, like, I feel like Prodigy kind of scratches the itch for the, like, the young people, like learning Starfleet, you know, and Lower Decks is kind of similar territory also. And that like, it's like, oh yeah, like the young people at like the start of their careers with, you know, they don't have like any of like the, any of like the power or the authority. They're just like the rookies. So I feel like it is like very familiar territory.
The Academy's different. There's going to be constant sex. There's going to be, you know, missions. They're going to be rivalries.
Yeah, there's going to be will there, won't days. There's going to be like love triangles. There's going to be like the soap opera side.
Yeah, and I think it was honestly those other ones are still ship based ones. And I think this being a, you know, I don't know where the is the Academy on Earth still.
Probably. I mean, like they moved their Federation headquarters back to Earth at the end of season 4. So if it is 32nd century, I think we're going to get like an Earth-based Academy again. I think that'll be like the thing, be like, "Oh, look, the Academy is back on Earth for the first time ever. Look at like all the, like, these new sets we just built in Toronto. They're representing the new Academy."
Wasn't Earth supposed to be kind of effed up though? Environmentally whacked?
No, they were kind of like politically, they had become like these weird isolationists in season 3, where they were kind of, it was very much like they built walls around themselves. It was kind of,
factionalized.
Yeah, it was like Earth, make Earth great again type.
I mean, honestly, a, like, you know, a space station academy would also be cool, but I think Earth would do a good bit to ground everybody and ground the audience so that they could have 32nd century craziness going on and all that tech, which they wanted new audience too, and so they don't want the audience to just be in way over their head, and you know, programmable matter is going to be pretty wild for some people. So I think an Earth-based thing does make sense. I think that'd be the smart play.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's another one of those where, you know, I'd love to basically, I want to hear more about it and what their intent is, you know, see that first trailer or just hear some more information. But it's this, I suppose in a lot of ways this is the one that I have the most hopes for, but also, you know, concerns that it could go wrong. You know, it could be, it might just not live up to what I think it could do. And that would be a little heartbreaking because it's an opportunity. It's really the only major Starfleet Academy thing that they've ever done.
It just occurs to me that if they do set it on Earth, it would be the first Earth-based Star Trek show. Even though, like, Picard arguably was for the first 3 episodes. I know a lot of people were calling it Earth Trek. So, and I'm sure it would get that criticism, but it's an idea they've always talked about. Like, back, the first idea for a animated Star Trek show was actually still when the original series was on the air, and it was the notion of doing kind of a cadets studying alongside the original series actors. And they I know, like, in the 80s when they were talking about, like, let's do Star Trek TV again, the idea of got floated around then. And they're like, in the 90s it was always rumored as a possible spinoff. What if they did like an Academy show? So I don't know, I guess it was like always kind of inevitable. It was like one of those like obvious ideas. Why not do Starfleet Academy? But
no, that, you know, they to some degree they go with what they know, which has mostly been ship based stuff. DS9 being the biggest exception.
Yeah, but I guess like in this day and age where it's like every show has to be like, well, this is Star Trek, except this time it's going to be whatever, fill in the blank.
Die Hard Star Trek.
I mean, it has to be something, I mean, you know.
Star Trek is still, it's still largely ship based. You know, they I don't feel like they've exactly been wildly exploring other genres. There's no Star Trek hospital show or Star Trek mystery show or anything like that. Honestly, I would like to see more of that.
Lean into that even a bit more.
You can have, you can have things that ground in the familiar with people. Like, say, you know, way back when we did our contest to come up with a Trek show, I had one that involved like a medical ship. And yeah, like, I think you could have, you could find ways to have the things that people like, which are lots of star travel, lots of things like that, in a sort of Doctors Without Borders thing with them on risky frontiers. And you can do that for any genre. That's just a random example.
But that Gene Roddenberry had that idea in the 60s. He wanted to do the M'Benga spinoff on a medical ship.
Did he really? You probably said that before, but I forgot that. That's wild. That would be amazing. They do that now.
No, instead he may or may not have murdered Klingons, so...
You know... do we know his fate in Trek lore? Is there anything canonical?
We just know those two appearances in the original series, and then the stuff on Strange New Worlds.
Okay, so his future is unwritten. Okay.
That was another heavily rumored thing in the 90s, though. I remember people talking like, oh, what if they did like a Starfleet medical? Like, yeah, they could bring back like Gates McFadden and have her be like, she could be like in command of it. And I remember reading these in like the letter submission forums and like Star Trek Magazine and Star Trek Communicator.
In the heyday of like ER and stuff like that in its early days.
Like Chicago Hope and ER, yeah, totally. Yeah. And those shows were, George Clooney became a household name. Yeah. Because of that show. Like, that show turned him into Batman.
Even though, well, I mean, I guess that's an argument against, right? But just a random genre, there's so many others they could explore. But I do still think, even though, like, oh yes, we're kind of a little bit past the big era of the hospital shows, you know, if you got into, like, just randomly, if this was a Doctors Without Borders kind of thing, where they're on the outskirts, they're, you know... pushing political boundaries, they're risking, you know, oh, well, they're going in with relief efforts. Have they crossed into someone's sovereign territory? Or is there too much risk of them provoking a war? They have to hold out. And then there's all those classic Trek tropes of like trying to find cures for viruses and things like that, that I think you could dive into in a much deeper way, use alien technology. Like, there's like just tons and tons of possibilities, so that, you know, you don't, even though hospital shows are not what they used to be, they could still, I think that was still one that could happen.
Yeah, I think that's still like a good idea.
But, you know, I'd watch an O'Connor show. I, you know, if they had the writing for it, I'd whatever.
That's all the I guess official canonical stuff that's in production or development. You know, as far as like Academy show, actually, like what happens next, I think we'll hear some casting news at some point. They'll probably start shooting sometime in the second half of the year after when Strange New World season 3 and Section 31 have wrapped, and that's when they'll be looking to shoot Starfleet Academy. But there's like the other media, like we still have books and comics coming out, so those haven't gone anywhere. But before I mention anything about that, just Nicholas Meyer, director of Star Trek 2 and 6, and co-writer of Star Trek 4, and also worked on Discovery for a little bit in the season 1. He's still saying they're going to do this Khan audio drama. He calls it a radio play, I think. But like their Khan or scripted podcast, I guess, is what people call these things now.
Yeah. Yeah, he's just using probably a little bit old school terminology.
He says that that it kind of got the brakes put on it during the strike, which is interesting because that's also like it wouldn't have been considered struck work, but maybe like the. Like, for whatever reasons, you know, voice actors weren't gonna mess around with that either out of solidarity. Right. So I get it if that's the case. I don't know. I'm not sure if this is like still happening though, because like no one else is talking about it. He's the only person who's talking about it, and he's also saying like I wrote it. I think it's really good. I think it could still work as a TV show. I think we should still shoot it as a TV show. So okay, obviously like you're enthused. You're gonna say like, oh yeah, it's still happening no matter what's going on behind the scenes. Because I don't think it's ever gonna be a TV show. So the fact that like he's saying like it could still be a TV show makes me think like, oh, you're just going to talk about this like it's like still likely to happen no matter. I'm not saying that like it's dead. But I'm just saying, like, if it was dead, it sounds like Nicholas Meyer would still be going around saying, like, oh, no, it's, like, really good. It could happen. So I don't know. It wasn't a high priority to me to get it as, like, an audio drama. I don't really need, like, Khan's backstory, what he was up to on SETI Alpha 5, and I'm almost kind of like how you were scared to see Bashir in the Section 31 movie. I'd almost be, like, kind of scared to see that stuff, although the fact that it's, like, Nicholas Meyer doing it would make me intrigued.
You know, when Ricardo Montalban talks about how he survived and tells Chekhov what happened, and there's that sinister music playing so suspenseful from James Horner, it's like, yeah, what can you do that's going to live up to that, where he talks about the creatures killing all their men and stuff, the SETI eels and everything? It's like, you got to be good if you're going to, like, try and match what the promise of those terrifying few sequences in Trek 2 were.
And also talking about, like, the Star Trek ethos, like, how do you do a Star Trek story about, like, this genetically engineered evil asshole trying to survive on a planet, but he's like a bad guy. Like, you know, there's not gonna be, like, any moral quandaries with Khan. He doesn't question things. He just does what he believes is like, oh, I'll do this because I declare that it's the right thing to do.
Well, you know, it's the same reason I think it could potentially work, although I think it's difficult to, is the same reason why we like Dr. Doom as a villain in Marvel Comics, is because there is a sort of code. He does, usually he's portrayed as caring about his people. Same goes for Black Adam over at DC. And like, you know, I imagine Khan probably would go to these great lengths to protect his people and, you know, face off, you know, himself against dangerous creatures and stuff out there, do risky stuff. Probably portrayed as, like, actually loving his wife, but also I think they would probably show him as a guy who, you know, maybe they would, the story would be, he had this chance to turn around. He could have been the, you know, survivor who united his people, and maybe even for a while he is, but then he falls into despair and he becomes the full on Khan we know. And I think that downfall would be the drama of it.
I just like hearing you explain it just now, and that sounds pretty cool, but I think I might have just come up with an idea. MacGyvers, right? His wife, or MacGyvers?
Yeah, MacGyvers, yeah.
Yeah, historian. But having her around, I think, would actually kind of be the key to making that show work. Because, like, oh, she's the good guy. Like, have her and Khan together, and, like, she's gonna have a kind of, like, you're kind of what we consider, like, our normal, like, kind of, like, Starfleet, like, ideals and stuff. And so you just keep her around for, like, she can be kind of like the audience, kind of like the heart and soul of the show. And then just have her tragic death at the end, and, like, you turn Khan into, like, the even more evil, deranged guy he is in The Wrath of Khan. And you get, like, fun, like, dramatic payoff. You know, it's climactic, and it also, like, conveniently lines up with what we know in canon. So, yeah, so there would be ways to do it. Do we really care? Like, are we really missing out if we don't listen to this on Spotify someday, or on Paramount Plus, I guess, as, like, a podcast within the streaming service, or however they distribute it? I don't think it'll be, like, a huge loss, but I am curious. And doing it, like, in this format, I think, you know, you're more likely to cast Khan with, you know, someone who can pull it off. If, like, you only have to worry about the voice. I think it might be a bit of an easier sell in some ways. And it would also be easier to dismiss if no one likes it, you know?
It's true. But, like, I've listened to enough fiction podcasts. I don't listen to them too often, but the audio play style, that I've heard some that I would consider great. And so I know that there is at least that, you know, even though it's a relatively new medium, that there is the capacity for greatness in there. So here's hoping.
Joel in the live audience is also pointing out Star Trek, Ship Historian is a show we need too. So, you know, give the doctors a show, and then you got to give the historians a show. I see how it works. Jill's pointing out Xeno Historian might be better, and you don't have just, like, the Earth history. No, Xeno Historian. I don't think that's been a thing in, you know, I guess, like, the history of aliens. That'd be cool. You know, what I was saying, like, the books and the comics have been really fun. I'm behind. I'm, like, 6 months behind on everything, but they have, I think, three ongoings now. They have their main ongoing comic series with Cisco. They have the Defiant ongoing series, where it's, like, Worf and Spock commanding the Defiant, doing, like, weird Black Ops stuff with Ro, and that's a ton of fun.
Father, are you getting behind on the Black Ops stuff now?
Yeah.
They found a balance you can work with?
They did. Yeah, they're not part of, like, a government agency, so... Mm-hmm. But they're doing, like, those two, and then the Picard's Academy, I guess, is also an ongoing series. I have no, if it's like, you know, limited to a certain number of issues, no one's mentioned it yet, so.
I was under the impression it was, but I, you know, now I'm suddenly not sure.
They have some other miniseries coming out. They have the Sons of Star Trek miniseries coming in February. They're doing that Lower Decks. It's like a choose your own adventure, but it's called Warp Your Own Way for legal reasons.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, that'll be out in the fall. Yeah,
so. We got to do that, Father. We got to do it on air and let people in the comments suggest, do we take this, do we fire phasers or do we try and negotiate?
We can do it as like a live stream. People can super chat what they want us to do.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do something with that. Yeah, we'll purchase it from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock,
Texas.
That sounds
like a cool place. Maybe everybody should check that place out, except that we don't do mail orders. But otherwise, you just move to Round Rock.
If you're passing through, yeah.
Yeah, or if you just want to go ahead and move there, we'll hang out.
Right there on I-35, easy to get to, lots of parking.
It's true.
Behind the Whataburger.
Yep.
that makes it sound like super Texan-y, but it actually is.
I mean, it is. That's where we are.
But the IDW stuff's been very fun. And then in addition to that, with the books, I guess like the three dudes that are writing a lot of the books in recent years, David Mack and Greg Cox and Dayton Ward. They all got a book coming out. David Mack is doing a Star Trek Picard book focused on Seven of Nine called Firewall. I think it's like her backstory when like the Academy Starfleet wouldn't let her in and stuff like that.
Seems like a good era to check in on.
There's going to be a Pliable Truths by Dayton Ward. It's kind of like a Deep Space Nine prequel. It's like takes place like during like the time of the Next Generation, though, and it involves all like Bajor and Cardassia, and Ro is a big part of it.
I feel like the word pliable isn't one that I would throw in a title personally, but the actual premise sounds pretty good.
It does. That sounds really neat. And that's coming out in May. And then the Greg Cox one, this is going to be like original series movie era, but I think it also has stuff in like the original series era. And it also has stuff in modern times in 2024. But the book is called Lost to Eternity. And part of it is like in 2024, there's a true crime podcast that's investigating this disappearance. I'm like, hey, there's this marine biologist lady who mysteriously like disappeared from San Francisco in 1986. After
really
encountering these weird myths. So yeah, like that's part of the book. And then then it has stuff like in with like Kirk and Spock, like in the future also.
But does it have her in it? Like, is she involved?
I think so. Yeah. I think we'll have her in the 23rd century. Like, we'll see like what she's doing when she goes back to the future.
Just saw some meme floating around that was like, you know, kind of, I think, to the tune of Star Trek, you know, needs to tell her story and show that. That actually sounds really cool. And I even like, you know, it's a little gimmicky to have it, you know, a portion of it set in our present. But it's actually a perfect fit for a true crime podcast sort of hook where people would be diving into that. And they'd be like, oh, yeah, she was spotted hanging around with some weird characters shortly before her disappearance. One who called himself an admiral. You know, was he an escaped mental patient? What was going on?
Yeah, yeah.
I will dive into this one.
I almost wish they were doing this as an actual pod, like do this as like a parody podcast, you know, as like a mockumentary podcast. I think that would be like the cooler idea than doing this as a book. But I don't want to shit talk the book. I mean, I haven't read it, so maybe the book is awesome. People can buy it in July and find out for themselves.
I imagine they'll use it as a framing device, and I guess I've got money that says that the podcasters will eventually have some an encounter or something like that where they will maybe meet somebody time traveling or something like that, and they will get confirmation and be like, shit, we know the answers, but now we can't reveal them, and something like that.
Yeah, the same like time cop who the one who got shot by the Romulan in Toronto and gave La'an the time travel. Like right before he got shot by a Romulan in Toronto, he went and shut down this podcast in 2024. But yeah, this is a big year for Star Trek. We're going to have like terrorist bombings in Toronto. We're going to have the Bell riots in San Francisco this year. The Iris reunification is going to happen. And then I'm not sure which one happens first, but World War III and the American Civil War are both supposed to be popping off. So that lines up a little like too well with like when Iran and the U.S. want to like launch missiles, and also like literally the only president who might be as divisive as Abraham Lincoln is either gonna go to prison or not go to prison this year. either way might result in riots. So
yeah, it's scary times.
It's a big year, 2024.
If it would be nice to know that we really had warp drive and meeting the Vulcans and all that stuff on the other side of it.
Yeah. But, hopefully, we can we'll make it to Montana. Is that going to be like the slogan for like the coming decades? It's like we just gotta hang in there till Bozeman. Maybe personally, I should adopt that as like a.
Yeah, Father, or get some t-shirts printed up, hold out for Bozeman or
that's
something like that.
I'm trying, like if I'm trying to survive to be a 80-year-old man there in my wheelchair waiting on the Vulcans. April 5th, 2063.
Man, let's shoot for that.
But in the meantime, we got plenty of stuff to focus on in 2024 with this Trek coming out. So it's an interesting year, you know, not the volume that we've had in some of the years past, but still, you know, when you lay it all out like this on the table and look at it, it's like, oh, wow, like it's like you said at the beginning of the show, Dave, like that's still a lot. So
it's a lot. Yeah.
I'm kind of surprised, you know, looking at this, like just how much there is. So.
If you were to tell somebody back in what, like, when was the gap in, like, say, 2006, 2007 or something like that? There wasn't anything going on, right?
Right, yeah, that would have been, like, when it started. Enterprise went off in 05.
Yeah. If you were to go back and tell them, oh, yeah, we've got, like, five shows or movies coming out this year, active comics, active books, active video games, all this stuff, they'd be like, get the fuck out.
Yeah, and, we have like some conventions going on, so I'm not going to be at the Star Trek San Francisco con that's in March, but there's like a lot of cool guests. I just saw today, I think, was it Robert Picardo and Siroc Lofton were announced to be it, but Creation is doing it, who does like the Vegas con, so I encourage people to, you know, check that out if the guests look cool to you. I hope that it's a big hit and they do it again, because I might go next year. I might do that in 2025. Y'all go to it this year and tell me how it is, if I need to come to it next year. And I'll be at Vegas in August. I'll be on the cruise in like 7 weeks. I still haven't like booked my flight to Florida, so I should probably get on that. Yeah, so I'll be around if people want to see me in person. I'll be at Vegas and I'll be on the cruise. Please say hi to me. Dave and I are going to be covering a lot of the new Trek coming out this year, but also when there's no new Trek, we're going to spend time talking about some old Trek starting next week.
Yeah, we're there. We're basically there.
So we're going to be covering Enterprise Season 1 starting next week. If people haven't seen this before, we did this with the Star Trek the Animated Series. We did this with Star Trek Deep Space Nine, where we kind of take it like 7, 8, 9 episodes at a time, just however many we grab. Mm-hmm. And you know, next week we're gonna do Enterprise Season 1 all the way up to like Civilization. We've already discussed Broken Bow in detail. Dave says he has like some more thoughts. I'm gonna have like some additional things to say, but I listened to our convo on Broken Bow a few days ago, and
the original one, yeah, from what, 5-ish years
from, yeah,
ago?
From right. Six. Before the premiere of Discovery. Like, I'd forgotten that. We barely covered all of the original premieres before Discovery's premiere, but that'll be fun to revisit that show. It's been interesting to me just kind of like rewatching these episodes and taking notes on them. Like, I had watched Enterprise several times, but this is the first time I'm like watching it like taking notes. And kind of, I'm like really like putting myself back in like that headspace. It was like going back to high school. I was in high school when Enterprise premiered in 2001. So yeah, so it was an interesting time. That was also like a very like insane, uncertain time. It premiered 2 weeks and a day after 9/11. So it was also like I was worried like, oh man, am I about to get like drafted and forced to fight World War III? I didn't know. So
yeah, Father, we only engage with Enterprise in times of great social upheaval in the world.
But now I'm over conscription age, so I feel like a little better.
Woo! Yeah, no, I'm very much looking forward to it. I think I'm going to get to some Jeffrey Combs stuff in that first batch, right?
Yeah. So we're going to have the Andorian incident. You see a lot of firsts in these first 8 or 9 episodes. You see like the first away mission, the first time, I guess, the first Star Trek, you know, ship on ship combat. So. Are you going to make fun of me for saying ship on ship? I was like,
no.
Weird.
No, I was thinking we're going to have the first grapplers.
Yeah, we get the first grapplers, so we get some grapple action. We get breaking the ice. That might be like the next week after that. I don't know if breaking the ice is in there or not, but Shit. Now I gotta look it up, because I don't want it to be like, I don't want it to be like, the stew didn't know breaking the ice. It is a episode. Okay, we'll be in there. Perfect. Okay. So grapplers included, y'all.
I thought that was like in the first two-parter. Don't they use them?
Oh yeah, they have a grapplers there too. But yeah, they had they had to do like some more grappler action on the
comic. Okay, cool, so. Cool. I'm just gonna like be knee-deep in it.
With like these Vulcans watching them, like look at these dumbasses. They don't even have tractor beams, but
yeah, basically they've got harpoon guns. Great.
If people want to check that out, then or if people want to watch along with us, then watch up until Civilization. That's season 1, episode 9.
Yeah, I think, and they should, and because I think this is going to make for fun discussion. What? How does it come to me in the year of 2024?
Again, thank you, patrons who make the weekly live show possible. It really means a lot to us. We appreciate it, and hope everyone is going to have a great week and come back and talk about Star Trek Enterprise with us. Until then, as always, live long and prosper, y'all.
Listen to the Text Trek podcast through Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or at text-trek.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/text-trek. And follow Fathery on Twitter at TXTrek. Please support us by liking our videos and subscribing to our channel on YouTube. Thank you and take care.